Blog Talk Radio.
Here's the problem. Your fights aren't,
you're not a very good offensive fighter, so you got to talk a gang of shit outside the ring to get people to give a fuck about you.
It's only one problem, my man. You tune in to watch me. You know my background.
I didn't watch your last fight. I don't watch your last two fights because your fights are boring, dude. Your fights are boring.
You're a professional.
24/7 is more interesting than your fights are, dog. And that's the long and the short of it.
You do know 24/7 the show that I invented, that I created.
You had to create it because you're not interesting in the ring.
Okay. So you do know who I am. I don't know who you are.
Congrats, fucking. I know. You don't know who I am, and I'm still getting on your nerves. Why is that bother? Why do I bother you, man?
You will get famous. After this interview, you will get famous now.
Mayweather, you know what the first thing is? Like, I don't even got nothing against you, man. I don't even understand this shit.
We already know you raised your profile. We already know you.
Yeah, that's what the fuck. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hey, you know what? Hey, when in doubt, play the race card. When you're winning, play the race card. I'm in trouble. Play the race card.
I'm a winner in life. I'll say it again like I said before. I'll say it again.
Whatever you have to do, play the race card.
We know you. We know. Like I said before, the black men always get it the hardest way. Everybody been knocking us from the beginning. We always gonna get to the top. We always gonna rise to the occasion.
Pro homo. Look, bro. You ain't no
man,
Muhammad
yeah,
Ali.
Listen, man.
You're not Muhammad
listen,
Ali.
Man,
Muhammad Ali took fights.
This dude need to get a gossip site. This dude need to get a gossip site. Get a bitch gossip site. Because if all you're doing is gossiping, why is my dick speaking on me? You know my whole stats. You love my dick. Matter of fact, you love my dick and get a new job, you faggot.
All right, bro. Good luck to you, man. Good luck to you. Stay ducking.
Floyd Mayweather, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the tornado, Tiny Penny Cow.
Did you manage to hear all that?
I did. That was the first I've heard of it. Where the hell did that come from?
Well, apparently Floyd Mayweather Jr. and 50 Cent were riding around New York City when this guy was on the air. And he decided to call in, or 50 Cent told him to call in.
Call the pussy direct. Quotes.
I listened to it a few times, and it's appropriate this week, I think, because remember I said not too long ago that this is going to be a big week. You know, this fight's going to happen between Mayweather and Pacquiao. It's going to happen this week, you know. It's a good chance. And we got 2 days left to be a full week and see if it happens, but I'm just curious to know, what did you think about Manny versus Marquez 3?
Well, I didn't see it. I kind of followed it online. Did not see the fight live. I was following the one blog. The one blog I followed obviously had it as a close fight, but had Pacquiao winning. Had him winning 115-113. Had it even go after 10 rounds, 5-5, had Pacquiao winning the last two rounds. Now, I've heard two pieces of feedback on this. You either have the people that thought Manny did enough to win, people that thought Marquez got robbed. It wasn't like the people that thought Marquez got robbed were not saying, oh, I think Marquez won, but it was close. It was Marquez got robbed. And the people that thought Pacquiao won thought the decision was just. Once again, it's hard for me to, give a, definite opinion on it because, like I said, I did not see the fight. I only followed what I was reading. Looking at the numbers, Pacquiao outthrew and outlanded Marquez, especially in power punches. But once again, that doesn't mean anything. You can hit a guy 20 to, 15 in one round, and then he might beat you 20 to 19 in five consecutive rounds.
Right.
You know, that still means punch-wise, you're even.
Well,
it still depends on, effective punches, too.
I think a lot of it has to do with, I think Marquez just happens to be the kryptonite that makes Pacquiao human.
Well, he's got so much experience fighting the same guy, you know, and he knows this is probably his last chance. He went in there with a pretty decent game plan. And I got to admit, I saw the fight from two different angles because first I watched the live streaming British broadcast, and Amir Khan was announcing, along with some other British dude who sounded white. I don't know who it was, but Amir Khan is obviously very familiar with Pacquiao. And at the end of the fight, he said, you know, I didn't think anybody in the world could beat Pacquiao, but I have Marquez up. And so, I mean, I watched a choppy, free streaming video of the British broadcast. So, parts of rounds I didn't see. But, you know, the commentators were heavily favoring Marquez. The crowd was favoring Marquez on the broadcast, obviously.
Well, you're going to have a pro-Mexican crowd there in Vegas.
Oh, man. There was, when I went to the Mike Tyson signing, which I'm going to talk about later. But, you know, there were people in line telling me, Marquez, for the first time. And I was telling my theory on, you know, it's going to go to the decision. But I think Pacquiao's going to take it. So I watched the British broadcast, and I get the perspective that Marquez got robbed. Then I start reading all these reports, you know, maybe he really did win if you look at it. So I managed to find the video online. I got to watch up to the seventh round before they got me off and said they're going to pay for the rest. But looking at those seven rounds, and actually scoring it myself, seeing all the action, slowdowns, and also the HBO feed was much closer. The British feed seemed like it was out in the audience more. So Marquez's punches looked like they were landing harder than they were. So I can understand why they saw it a little differently. So look at the HBO footage that's really close up. You start to realize that Pacquiao did too. Most of the rounds, there were a few that Marquez won now, but he didn't get robbed. It was a draw at worst, I think. You know, I think they should have called it a draw. But it definitely shouldn't have been you know, a cruising victory. You know, only one guy having any draw was kind of disturbing. But you can't really argue one way or the other with a subjective decision like that because it was a close fight. On that. So, it's kind of interesting that now they're starting to think about, oh, let's do number four. But I don't think Marquez is going to want to do that unless it's in Mexico this time. But, you know, we haven't heard a higher hair of Mayweather this week yet. So we'll see what happens there. But I thought it was a really good fight. He struggled at times, but he never seemed to be like putting it all out there like he was used to do against the opponent. He seemed to be just kind of like going through the motions.
And
another guy I talked to at the Tyson signing said that Manny would have to lose this fight for Floyd to take a fight with him, which is not an opinion that I didn't hear before.
Or you have the potential of losing money on doing it that way.
Yeah. So Pacquiao, I think, had to win either way. You know, even if he outright lost that fight, they were going to find a way to get him to, you know, go home with the win so that they could make this fight. But maybe it's just going to take a little bit longer to hash out the details. I don't know, but this fight seems like it's got to be made. Manny, for the first time ever, looked like he was losing a step. He didn't look like the best Manny he could have been. So, it's now or never. That's the way it goes. I was thinking about it today, and it's kind of a funny analogy, but I was thinking this whole build-up to the drama, the bullshit surrounding, you know, why this fight has been made yet, and when is it going to be made? The thing that reminds me of is
Ben Affleck when he was screwing around with Jennifer Lopez.
And there's all this build up. They're going to get married, you know. She had an engagement ring the size of, like, you know, I don't know, a fucking boulder.
And this shit never happened. They made that shitty movie right before it all fell apart. Geely, remember that?
Love that movie. You know,
like, there's no other movie in the history of movies that got worse reviews. It was so bad. It was like the only movie they'd ever been in together at that point, I think. So it's just, that's what this is starting to look like if they don't fight soon. You know, that fucking train wreck in Hollywood, what it's going to be in boxing. So I think the fight gets made, but kind of getting nervous that it hasn't already been talked about as the negotiations are ongoing. We'll see, though. I'm sure you watched UFC on Fox.
Oh, yeah, you know it.
I'm sure you had 4 seconds of your time, too.
Yeah, I guess it would have lasted about a minute.
So 64 seconds, literally. Literally 64 seconds. Was over. And remember, you know, I made a big deal out of it last week. What did I say? If it goes 10 seconds, it doesn't matter. That's the only fight they're going to have on Fox. Turns out something like 8.8 million people tuned in for a half an hour of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
8.8 million viewers and a 64-second fight. And, you know, for an event that's supposed to bring people into the sport and show them what it's all about. A lot of people that are used to boxing, no doubt. That was a horrible fight to introduce the public to MMA because it showed you how fast a fight could be stopped. You know, there was a little bit of doubt to it. Didn't look like Velasquez was really out. You know, it was a violent end, but then we find out afterwards Junior Dos Santos had a knee injury going into the fight. Major tear, break, whatever. So, you know, there's that aspect of it. Velasquez hadn't fought in so long. He looked rusty, but he was doing all right at the very beginning, and then Dos Santos just came out of nowhere with an overhand right. That was all she wrote. Velasquez fell down on the canvas and never got a chance to get back up. but obviously it's quicker than one of the quickest boxing knockouts of Mike Tyson, 90 seconds against Spinks. Quicker than that, 64 seconds for a heavyweight belt. And it was a good card. I mean, the co-main event was Clay Guida versus Ben Henderson for a shot at that belt at their way. And it just, it was sort of a little bit of a war. Went on 3 rounds. Henderson won. But, you know, only one fight on Fox. A bad idea. but, you know, in respect to boxing, it helped out because it gave people more time to watch the boxing card on pay-per-view.
Yes, that's if they were able to order it in time.
Right.
I think that usually you miss out on your chance to order at like 9:30.
Right.
So if that half hour of bullshit pushed you past that 9:30 minute and you didn't get a chance to order yet, you're like, oh yeah, after the, whoever the hell it was, Dos Santos or whoever the hell it was, after that fight, yeah, then I'll order the Pacquiao fight, and that fight ends at 9:45, you're screwed. You would have to order the Pacquiao fight before you put on the UFC broadcast. It was all Dana White being a complete piece of shit. My one friend the other week, last week, we were talking about it, And I was in one of my moods, which happens frequently anymore. I was ripping on Dana White, and I used that audio. I was kind of quoting that guy. Used that audio, that fuck Dana White audio that you played a couple months ago. And I was in there, and I called him. Oh, he's a boxer overcut. He's never been punched in his life. But then, you know, he's a glorified Richard Simmons. And I said, you know, using all those lines. And he's like, yeah, but he's like, oh, I love it though. I'm like, yeah, it's garbage. And I just thought, I was just on an anti-UFC raid. And then when I was even talking to another friend of mine who's a little bit more, not like level-headed a little bit, just a little bit more understanding, I said, you know, you look at it like this. You're trying to fight and make a living or whatever. This guy determines if you're allowed to fight in his league or not. I'm like, get the hell out of here. It's like, you know, here's the thing. Like, Don King is a promoter, and he might have the heavyweight champion of the world or whatever. And, you know, he's always going to want to, you know, give his guys the shot so he can make the money and promote it. And he might do shit like he did when Tyson had to fight Holyfield. And, yeah, Holyfield gets the title shot, but he has to sign over a deal with Don King before the fight. So if Holyfield wins, which he did, Don King gets his next three fights. Okay, you'll have shenanigans like that. But here's the bottom line. Professional boxing is professional boxing. And even especially back in the day when there was one champion in per division. I mean, now it's like, okay, if you don't have a relationship with Don King, who has the WBC champion, and he might be the best guy out there, you can still fight one of Bob Arum's boys for the WBA or the IBF title. Back in the day, it's like, you know, it doesn't matter who had the heavyweight champion of the world. Muhammad Ali is the heavyweight champion of the world. And it didn't matter if, you know, Don King promoted him and somebody else promoted Smoking Joe Frazier. Smoking Joe's the number one contender. You got to fight Joe Frazier. Or you got to fight George Foreman. Or Kenny Norton. Or Ernie Shavers. Or whoever the hell it may be at that time. You know, he's the number one contender. You can't get away from him. With this Dana White bullshit, you can be a great fighter, but if he doesn't want you in his playground, you'll never get a chance to fight for that quote-unquote title. You're going to have to fight in one of those other legs.
Right. Well, it's interesting you mentioned Dana White and went off on him a little bit there because, you know, today was the Occupy Wall Street Day of Action, so your protest is appropriate. We're going to occupy Radio Street today. We're all going to be up. That's a peaceful Floyd in the meeting, which wasn't the most time to make, of course. But, I had a little bit to say about Dana White this week, too, because, number one, the UFC just filed this huge lawsuit against New York State. And I'm going to get into that in greater detail later. But I just want to throw it out there. If anybody wants to call in tonight, since we don't have a guest, the number is 347-324-3228. I'm curious to know what people out there think about this Pacquiao fight. You know, obviously over the weekend, and whether he's going to fight Mayweather. And also, what did you think about the Fox broadcast, and what do you think about the New York State lawsuit? But so, first of all, Dana's part of this lawsuit. Sues New York State to get approved there. He tells fans to stop whining about the league and the treatment of the Fox News, Fox broadcast. He says stop whining. But the thing is, it really blows my mind. It really came home to me the other night watching the Ultimate Fighter last night. And they have a coaches challenge that's part of the competition. Now, keep in mind, we talked to the Ultimate Fighter that was on the show not too long ago. Trash Bag Charlie, they used to call him. Chuck O'Neill. We had him on a little while ago, and he was telling us about how grueling that whole deal is. You know, there's so many straight weeks
in the house fighting every week, you know, exhibitions, having to make weight, you know, having to fight through injuries, all these guys in the show. And the coaches come in there, and they fight on the finale, but they all they have to do is train and play jokes on each other. So they have the Ultimate Fighter the other night, and they have the Coaches Challenge. They go to a bar, and they're playing air hockey for $10,000, whoever wins. Air hockey for $10,000. And the winning coach's team, every member gets $1,500. You know, and now this year is the first time they've done bonuses for knockouts of the season whatsoever, and so on. So it blew my mind for a second, because here's $10,000 being put on the line for a freaking air hockey game. And Dana White even said, this is my favorite part of the show, given $10,000 out for an air hockey game. And he has paid his fighters in recent fights. Tyler Toner is the one that pops into my mind for some reason, but he paid him $3,000 for a 3-round MMA fight not too long ago. And he's paying guys $10,000 to win a freaking air hockey game. And they get millions of dollars to do this Fox TV debut. And I guarantee you the combined take-home pay after taxes for the two main event guys didn't even approach $1 million. And no matter what the gate was, whatever, they're making millions of dollars hand over fist. They're having no trouble paying off their debt. They're a very successful company. And it's show me the money time, really, for Dana White. I mean, shut up and pay your guys what they're worth. Make it a statement to Bellator and Viacom with their billions that you better start paying guys like us, because we're not slowing down anytime soon. We're going to take care of the people who brought us here. Dana White came out and said that, UFC has made over 40 millionaires over the years. But, you know, the UFC has not paid these guys that much, all 40 guys, I guarantee you. Their base pay, you know, probably even before taxes, there's no way that the UFC has put out paychecks that have made 40 millionaires. A lot of those guys, they got there through their sponsorships, through their own work and their management's work. And that's another thing, you know, what do they pay to train? What do they pay for their health insurance before the UFC instituted the health insurance? How much did they have to do to get there? What do they pay their management? You know, do they take home that pay, those millions or multi-millions? They said there's a few multi-millionaires, but 40 millionaires. No, the UFC didn't make them. They made themselves through hard work, you know, and because, luckily enough, maybe they were associated with the UFC, they were able to advance their careers a little bit further than people who weren't. But Dana White is so arrogant, and you're right, you know, he's never fought a real fight in his life. He's maybe had a couple exhibition boxing matches here and there, maybe, I don't know, but and never even really did anything serious with boxing, as much as he supposedly was a boxer-sized instructor and taught people.
He's a moron.
And you know, I'm halfway through his mother's book, which has been kind of making some waves. I actually saw a video of his mother talking about him, really mentioning the book. And it was even better, but, you know, you got to remember, this guy just somebody created a monster when they gave him all this power and this authority. And he's a windbag now. He's a professionally paid windbag. Worse than Don King ever was, because he doesn't have a filter.
You know what? Let me just get off topic real quick about things that piss me off. let's put MMA rare form today. Let me close my door before, because I know the language is not going to be very good in a minute. Yeah, I have one of those days, you know, where I go to a job that I positively despise, dealing with customers that, for the most part, I hate. So I literally, everybody got a big fuck you from me today because they were pissing me off. And I had to go home. I was aggravated. Got to go home and hit the heavy bag. Got to get through my annoyance level, right? So I go home, beat the shit out of the bag. The poor bag, I felt sorry for it for 5 rounds. And now I'm trying to get this football grid done. So people email me, where's the grid? Where's the grid? Shut the fuck up. You'll get it in time, you know? I'm entering 50 people's pitch. Shut up. So then one guy sends me last year's grid, week 11. Like, you got to be shitting me. You can't even get the right fucking year. And other people are forgetting picks. And then they're like, can you call me? What do I do on Thursday nights, people? What do I do on Thursday nights? Seriously.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Rich, listen. I am going to get off for just a moment. I am going to dial back into the show. I got two text messages. I'm texting these people. I can text while I'm on the call, but I can't receive text while I'm on the call. I don't know how to do that. So I'm telling people, email me. Email. TeamTornado1@AOL.com. That's my football pool email. I just got text messages. I'm like, fucking retarded retards. So give me 2 seconds and I will call you back. Okay, so just talk about some UFC or God knows what and I'll be right back with you.
Don't I have to call you back, or are you
going to
call into the show?
I'm going to call right in. Okay?
I have a little clip. Well, we'll go through the UFC card very quickly. Of course, UFC on Fox 1, but only one of the fights, the main event, was actually on Fox out of the 10 fights. The preliminary fights all on other channels, other internet channels, actually, not even TV. So that kind of made it weird, too, for MMA fans. But as I mentioned, Ben Henderson beat Clay Guida. That was Anderson's decision on all 3 rounds. Dustin Poirier beat Pablo Garza by submission in the second round at the 132 mark. Ricardo Lamas beat Cub Swanson by submission. Triangle choke in the second round at the 216 mark. DeMarcus Johnson beat Clay Harbison by knockout in the first round, 134. Darren Uyen Oyama beat Norifumi Yamamoto in the battle of the longevity. That was a unanimous decision in all 3 rounds. Robert Peralta beat Mercier by TKO due to his funny accidental headbutt punches in 154 in the third round. Alex Caceres, otherwise known as Bruce Leroy, beat Cole Escobedo by decision, unanimous decision, third round, obviously won all 3 rounds. Mike Pierce beat Paul Bradley by unanimous decision on all 3, and finally Aaron Rosen beat Matt Lucas by majority decision. So there you have it. That's UFC on Fox 1. And as I mentioned, we are going to discuss a little bit more the UFC's First Amendment lawsuit. But before we do that, I just happened to catch this before we got on the air. I've been listening to an interview from Canadian Sport Network, TSN. It's Chael Sonnen and reporter Michael Landsberg. And it's a little over 10 minutes, I think. And it's sort of funny, it's sort of disturbing. But we want to talk about free speech here. It's first, there is Chael Sonnen exercising his first as his so used to doing. So.
Yesterday we interviewed UFC fighter Chael Sonnen. We pursued him because he is known as a personality who can be unpredictable. He was. There's two parts to this. We begin with how it began yesterday. Me telling him, watch this clip, and then I'll talk. Here's the clip. Those words from Chael Sonnen after beating Brian Stann at UFC 136 on October the 8th. Now, just over 5 weeks later, Chael, you backed down. Is that true?
What?
You backed down. Didn't you say that the offer has expired and you're no longer willing to throw out those terms?
You might want to take the bass out of your tone. I'm not sure you know who you're talking to here, but I've never backed down from anything, so check your facts.
Okay, so you're saying that you will fight Anderson Silva, and that if he beats you, you will leave the UFC forever.
When?
What are you talking about? What, is this your first day on the job? Okay, well, tell me what I'm saying at all.
Five different stories here. I mean, this is like doing amateur hour or something. What show am I on here?
What did you
this
say?
Is this for public radio?
What did you say after your last fight in the Octagon?
Well, you just played it. But what are you talking about? You're combining stories here. Where do we go from me defending my championship for the first time, issuing a challenge for my second championship title defense, to all of a sudden the great Chael Sonnen is back down? Who's doing your facts there?
I heard that you said the offer had expired.
I heard that it expired. Well, now you're hearing from the champion himself.
Okay.
The offer has not expired. What are you even talking about? What offer? Should we just redo this, or do you just want to go on the air and look like a fool? What is it you're even talking about?
It wasn't, okay, we can redo this.
Don't redo this. This is the interview. This is the interview. I realized, oh, God, it really is amateur hour.
So what, you don't see
that we're going to redo this?
Yeah. Okay.
That was great TV.
Yeah, I just want to make sure
that was great TV, and now you really have ruined it.
You actually really sold
now
me.
Now I'm being serious.
Okay.
Yes, I'm aware. That was great TV, and now we've lost.
Okay, we'll make it even better. So what did you say? I just want to make sure that I have it correct.
Well, you know what I said, but you're telling me that I backed down.
I heard you backed down.
That's garbage.
Okay, so
how? How do you just say things like, I hear you back down? Here I am looking to pick a fight with Anderson. I backed down. I stood there big and tall, and he covered his mouth like a little fruity boy. And you're going to come on ESPN and say that I backed down while I give you a free interview?
Okay.
He's the one that backed down. How could you even say something so stupid?
Sure.
Why don't you try to go get a free interview with Anderson Silva? See how that works out for you.
So, okay, hold on to that. I like that.
You're going to tell me that I backed down? What do you want? What do you want to do?
Does he offer?
If I tell you I'll sell you my car for $10,000, you think I can just call you back a year from now and say, hey, I'll take that $10,000 for the car? That's not how offers work. Is that how you guys do business in Canada?
Yeah, that's it.
Because in my country that created business, offers expire. I made him an offer. Apparently, it didn't work. He didn't accept it. So it's not that I backed down, but apparently I need to present him with a new offer. You guys probably don't do that in socialism, but in America, in a capitalistic society, that's how things work.
I really had no idea what he was saying, what he was referring to. I didn't know if he was joking, as he's known to do, or if he was offended, as he's known to be. So we started again upon his suggestion. Those words from Chael Sonnen after beating Brian Stann at UFC 136 on October the 8th, 5 weeks later. Let's clarify this, because you and I have been debating before we went on the air. What is your offer and challenge to Anderson Silva?
Well, I would love to clarify it, and if I had enough respect for you and your show, I would probably do it.
Okay, so you throw something out, and 5 weeks later, you're walking away from it?
Next question.
Okay, August the 7th, 2010, UFC 117, 3:10 of the fifth round. What are your memories of that?
2010?
Yeah.
I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
Well, I remember Anderson Silva, after you beat him for four rounds, submitted you.
All right. So was that like a trick question? Was
no, I want to get your thoughts on
that. A trick question.
No, it's not a trick question.
You already know the answers.
Right. No, my question is.
You have a little cheat sheet. Did you write that down on the palm of your hand?
No, I did it right from here.
Today's interview.
Have you worked on your jiu-jitsu since then? You certainly look like you had against Brian Stann.
I work on skills every day.
Would you agree that your jiu-jitsu at that point was probably deficient?
No.
No? So how did you let a guy, after you dominated him for four rounds, submit you in the fifth round?
Well, look, it's a two-man sport. It's not a matter of letting somebody do something. I've been doing stuff my whole life. It's, guy walks his whole life. Doesn't mean he doesn't stumble every now and then.
Right.
And if you fight him again, how do you prevent that from happening? The stumble. Oh, who cares if it does happen? Who cares? Who cares if it does happen? I don't get that. I'm sure you don't. You're a commentator, you don't get locked in the octagon.
Right.
I think you chose the right career path.
Right.
You don't care if you lose to Anderson Silva? What is this, like, gotcha questions? Let's just move. This is turning confrontational here while I've given up my time to come and give you an interview. Do you have anything pertinent to ask, or are we just going around and around here?
Oh, I thought that was a pertinent question. I asked you about jiu-jitsu.
Well, it's not. It's a stupid question.
Okay.
So read the little palm of your hand that you wrote your points down on and move to the next one. Let's see if we can actually do something here today, give the people something to watch.
Is the A in MMA the art? Is that dead?
I don't even know what mixed martial arts stands for. Okay, I mean, I don't know where that came from. Mixed martial arts is a legal term that can date back to the 2001 Nevada State Legislature. I don't work for the Ultimate Mixed Martial Arts Championship. I'm not a martial artist. I am a fighter. I work for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and I don't care about art or their little gis or their little cotton belts.
And would that describe, for instance, the Nogueira brothers?
Well,
you're talking about the little geese, and you're talking about Anderson Silva, who's a black belt, right? And he got it from the brothers. And I'm asking you whether your description of the way mixed martial arts shouldn't be describes those guys.
We're talking about Anderson Silva since when? You just said we're talking. When are we talking about Anderson Silva?
I was asking you. See, are you playing with me now, or are you being serious? Because people are watching this and going, what are you talking about?
I'm truly confused. Look, I mean, here. Do you have a question for me? Let's do that. I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but I am truly flabbergasted by this. Are we doing an interview, or what are we doing here? What is it you want to talk about? You're bringing up a fight from 2 years ago?
Oh,
I don't understand the relevance. I'm happy to talk about it. But certainly if you follow this sport at all, you know that these questions have all been covered. So, I mean, if this is your first day in MMA, I guess. Do you know what the octagon is? Have you heard of that before? Sorry, let me calm down. I don't want to give you nightmares tonight.
And why would I possibly have nightmares? Okay, so address that as
watching a guy out of control, just losing control over here.
So you think you're totally in control at this point?
Control of what?
Of yourself.
Of my domain? Sure.
It seems like Anderson Silva is a humble guy. How has he gotten you so riled up? Is that a legitimate question? Is that a legitimate question?
What?
GSP, then. You like him as a fighter?
Right. Grease St. Pierre.
Grease St. Pierre, insinuating that.
I do like him as a fighter.
You do?
I think he's pretty good.
Right.
I think he's great.
So you said that you stopped watching him because you like to watch hockey and rugby and any place where a fight will break out, implying that he doesn't really fight. Is that correct?
Yes.
But you just said you like him as a fighter. I don't understand. I must be missing something here.
You got that right.
So do you like his style of fighting or not?
Yes.
Would you beat him if you fought him?
I would do my best.
I would make the assumption you would do your best any time in the octagon, would you not? So that doesn't really tell me much. So you're leaving now because of what reason? Kind of has that Mike Tyson feel back in the day. Perhaps you should do a few sit-ups as well. Apparently, that is the end of a man that we were actually really looking forward to talking to, Chelsea.
That's just a little train wreck. It's sponsored by Canada. Are you with us, Tony?
I am with you. I got back on literally about a minute after I had got off.
I don't watch a lot of mixed martial arts. I don't know many of the competitors. I can tell you right now, that guy is a pompous asshole. I can tell you right now, I don't like him. And You know, and here's, in boxing, you're going to get your Floyd Mayweathers, who we actually opened the show with, on having a spat like that. But then again, Floyd Mayweather's a guy that just paid for smoking Joe Frazier's funeral. Okay, I mean, you're going to get your guys like Roy Jones, who always came off as real cocky, or Nassim Hamed, these guys that, you know, like to toot their own horn and be very arrogant. But on the same lines, I think boxing has a little bit more, and now I'm going to defend my sport. I see a lot in the mixed martial arts realms. A lot of these guys are nice, but a lot of them, I mean, I don't watch those shows like The Ultimate Fighter, but all they want to promote is antisocial behavior. They want to promote trash talk. They want to promote, you know, tearing up houses and acting, you know, like idiots. Now, I'll tell you, the first interview I did as part of Fight News Unlimited almost 4 years ago was, what the hell was that guy's name? Wes Sims. Did not like him. A horrible interview. The guy was an egotistical, windbag. It was a horrible interview. This guy, Chael Sonnen, I could see being a horrible interview. You get a guy like that on the phone, I'll have nothing to say to him, honestly. I won't even try to make any jokes with him. You get a lot of these guys out there that they, you know, unfortunately, it has a lot to do with the culture that this country is turning to. And you get kids watching him, and then they try to follow a guy like that, please. I mean, that's worse than Ali ever would have been with Howard Cosell. I mean, that's worse than Floyd Mayweather was with Larry Merchant or Mike Tyson with Jim Gray. 10 times worse. The guy, I don't know the interviewer, but those questions seem legitimate. You were fighting the best fighter in the world, and you were beating him, and then he got you, and he submitted you. I don't remember that. I don't. Believe me. You know what? You know what, Rich? I'm going to tell you something. I remember. What's today's date? November 17th, right? Yeah. November 17th, 1997, 14 years ago tonight, I was down at the Richmond Men's Club, but a show hosted by VMI, fighting a guy named by the name of Willie Taylor. That was 14 years ago. I remembered it. I remember the details of the fucking fight. This guy, I don't remember anything that happened 5 minutes ago, much less something that happened to 15 months ago. Bullshit. You're fighting for the championship of the world against the best fighter in the world? That's going to be ingrained in your fucking memory. I remember fights that I had in the regionals and the nationals from 15 years ago. I remember what I thought making the weigh-ins. So this guy is a load of shit.
But did you have four times the legal limit of testosterone in your system while you were in Muslim?
Very true. Very true. Well, that interview was going on. I was reading him a little bit, a little bit on his Wikipedia page, and yeah, not impressed.
The only thing I can give him credit for is the reporter was the sport of MMA. It's called the Nogueira brothers, and it's the Nogueira brothers. Anybody who knows anything about MMA knows how to pronounce their freaking names. And it was the Gracies who really wore geese, so he didn't even get that right. But I think Chael is going to be difficult with no matter who he interviews. Cocky asshole. If it was like the Prince situation where Prince changed his name to a symbol, I think he should just change his name to Arrogant Bastard. He's been busted for his first testosterone use.
Yeah.
So I guarantee a little of that testosterone coming in, but it didn't stop doing that. And it obviously affected his ego. But, you know, it's funny when you listen to it. It kind of reminds me of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Have you ever watched that show?
I have not, even though one of my favorite actors, Danny DeVito, is on there.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, a few funny guys from Philadelphia on that show. They all, you know, do this, all these antics around the bar. And one of the actors on it, the guy that plays Mac, he has the same exact voice as Chael Sonnen. So sounds exactly like him. And then there's the other character, Dennis, who's really pompous. So it's like a combination of those two as far as the attitude and then the voice of the guy from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So, I don't know, it kind of cracks me up because that's like, it's like art imitating life. But this guy is the real thing. You couldn't write a script like that. He's just that much of an asshole. Whether that makes him a better fighter or not, I covered it. But I just thought that clip was interesting. I just got it right before the show tonight, but one thing that kind of transitions to is the UFC lawsuit. His name is not on it, as it's like. The UFC sued New York State for all kinds of First Amendment issues, saying their ban on MMA is unconstitutional. And I'll tell you, the complaint is like 100 plus pages, and then 20 plus pages of exhibits. And it's a novel. It really is. I mean, I skimmed it, and I can tell you it's like a thesis paper for a master's degree. And it's been done by actually a fairly famous lawyer, at least somebody with a little bit of a reputation for being a heavy hitter in the legal world, Barry E. Friederman. He's a professor of law at NYU and specializes in constitutional law. And he's got a book out there called The Will of the People, How Public Opinion Has Influenced the Supreme Court and Shaped the Meaning of the Constitution. So he's been around, you know, and this is the funniest part of the whole thing. The law firm is called Morrison and Forrester, LLP. Sure. Take a wild guess what the website is. Morrison and Forrester.
Morrison and Forrester.
The website address is mofo.com. mofo.com for Morrison and Forrester. And this Friedman guy, he put together a real masterpiece as far as stories go. And you know, a guy like that has got to be making hundreds of dollars an hour, if not over $1,000 an hour, to put something like this together. And that, you know, just like the thing with Dana White giving $10,000 away for an air hockey game, that kind of got me thinking, you know, these guys are going to pay to have these lawyers attack New York State, tie up the resources of New York State in this lawsuit just to get their way and have their events there. But they're not paying their fighters near that much, considering the amount of time they spend in training and getting ready for a fight, doing the PR that they have to do, you know, the works, what they have to go through. But anyway, the actual lawsuit itself is very well written. There's some excellent points. There's some interesting people in the mix as far as who is among the plaintiffs. There's even a guy who was from Philadelphia, believe it or not, Philly guy, has been watching MMA for 20 years. Okay. And saw this guy who had killed four people on a New York saw the guy on a New York subway. The guy had already killed four people and injured four others in knife attacks. 23-year-old guy. And this guy, this young man, was a pretty big dude. There was finally this guy comes onto another train from, you know, same subway system but different train. He runs onto this guy's train. And there's cops on the train, but this guy is then his last, you know, resort here. He goes up to this dude
who's been watching MMA for 20 years, and he pulls out this big butcher knife and says, "You're going to die today." So the guy obviously takes action to save his own life and take this guy out. And he, you know, did a leg sweep, first of all, which he says he learned from watching MMA, never practiced it in his life. But basically, MMA saved this guy's life. His name is Joseph Losito. He disarmed the guy with the knife, and he stopped what was a 28-hour stabbing spree. And it's this 23-year-old madman. He had stitches and staples all over himself from getting cut up with the knife. He's got cut on the skull, had a wicked black eye, and MMA literally saved his life and maybe other people just because he watched it on TV. So you put stories of people like that in there, and it's all of a sudden it's more about the story of what MMA as a sport is and what it represents and what it can do rather than just the legal aspects, which is interesting. You know, it's kind of like if you're a religious person and you go to mass when you're a kid, or your parents drag you to mass, and you listen to different preachers and the way they teach things. Certain preachers will go right by the book and they'll just do the psalms and the, you know, the hymns, and that's it. Other guys will get up there and they'll tell you a story. You know, and that's how lawyers do it too. Some lawyers who are really good will tell you a story at the same time they're proving a point legally. This guy does that by adding all these people. But the thing that they really and truly screwed up with was the UFC being the only plaintiff who is an organization involved in MMA. You have these different people like Joseph Losito. You have actually a couple girls, which is the ultimate in irony and hypocritical behavior here, because you have Gina Carano as a plaintiff with the UFC, when we all know what Dana White said about women in MMA. He doesn't want to see it. He's never going to put a woman in the octagon, he's pretty much said. It's not going to happen in the UFC. Now, they bought Strikeforce, so technically they own, you know, Gina Carano's future in that league, but they're not doing anything to help her out. You know, they're pretty much killing off the women's division, and they're happy to see it die. And they put a lady like Gina Carano onto this lawsuit like they're pimping her, basically. You know, like they created her. They didn't create her. They bought her situation out from under her. And they're treating that whole women's division like shit anyway. So I think it's a real slap in the face to have her on there like, you know, she's their million-dollar baby when she's not. You know, she's actually promoting her movie now. She hasn't fought since 2009 when she lost the title. So she gets thrown on there. She's not even from New York. She's from Texas, and she went to college in Vegas. So, I mean, all around, just having her on there is kind of offensive. And then they have a couple other sisters who run women's MMA site from a woman fan's perspective. Like they're all about women's rights all of a sudden in the UFC. But they don't go ahead and try to reach out to these other organizations like Bellator, which is really now the recognized second best. They mention all the other ones like the Maximum Fighting Championships, MFC, so all these other fledgling organizations that probably would have been happy for their lawyers to just, you know, write it up that they're part of this complaint like they did for all these other people. So they get all these great plaintiffs, individuals other than themselves, but they don't bother and go and get the organizations on board other than, you know, the ones they own, obviously. So that was a big disappointment. But they're right spot on the law. That's the thing. Like, mixed martial arts. There's the word art in it. And the thing that really makes it tough for New York to win this, and don't get me wrong, as much as I'm critical of this lawsuit, I want them to win. I want to see MMA in New York as much as the next guy. But I also kind of like the fact that somebody's holding them accountable and making them work for it. And they are right. They do go through a whole history of how when this ban was passed in 1997, the sport was very different than it is today. It has evolved quite a bit, and it is very safe compared to how it used to be with guys fighting 2-3 times in one night. It's obviously a much more refined sport. But at the same time, we've said it time and time again on this show, the jury is still out on the long-term injuries. You know, these guys, the heavyweight title just got changed hands again. Perfect example is the heavyweight championship of the UFC. Not only has it changed hands so many times in the past few years, but it seems like it's the Sports Illustrated curse. When you win the title, you're out with an injury.
That's right.
For a year.
Is it worse than
the
EA Sports curse?
It could be, you know.
It's the worst ever, you know.
Almost died with his shit, if you believe what Dana White said. You know, Cain Velasquez was out over a year with his knee injury. Then, as soon as Dos Santos wins the title, he announces he's injured. He's going to be out for a while. And he was injured before going into the fight. And that was kind of something that undermined the safety check a little bit, because they said, you know, these fighters are checked over time and time again before they even get into the octagon. They mentioned that right in the lawsuit. They obviously didn't check Junior that well, or they just needed him too bad. They overlooked it. Bottom line is, you know, they should be approved in New York across the state. But the other thing is, they wanted to make this more than just a publicity stunt. They should have made it a sweeping lawsuit naming all the other organizations as fellow plaintiffs, or at least the ones they could get permission from. And I guarantee they could have got 10 or 12 different leagues to sign on for free, you know, if they just did the work for them. Wouldn't be that hard. But they also didn't name all the other states which don't allow MMA. Because there's more than just New York. So why didn't they go in Vegas, where they can definitely win, at a federal level in Vegas, because that's their jurisdiction, that's where their main company is. Do it from there, and sue every single state. And they would have made a lot of progress. It would have been a sweeping, massive lawsuit. Certain states would probably just fold and give them momentum. I mean, it would have just, if they're going to go for the juggernaut, you know, for the jugular, they should have gone all, they should have thought of every contingency. They're going after New York State, where, you know, Occupy Wall Street, it's going nuts now. So obviously the civil servants in New York State and the court system's already tied up because of that bullshit. Whether you agree with it or not, you know, it's a lot of conundrum going on in the city anyway. About the rest of the state, but so the UFC files this lawsuit. It's got a great story behind it, a lot of great individuals involved. The law is good, it's a sound argument. But it just comes across as so much more of a publicity stunt because of all these issues than it is an actual meaningful lawsuit. And because it's filed in New York, it's more like a slap in the face that they're going to take offense to, and they're probably going to have some judge just wants to protect the reputation of the state, and he's going to have it thrown out, or he's not going to take it seriously. So, for all those reasons, that's my Occupy Radio Street message. Is the UFC sucks for doing that way. They do. Plain and simple. And if you're going to spend that kind of money per hour on these type of lawyers, you know, it'd be one thing if they paid their fighters that well for all their time and training, all the time they spend doing what they do to help the UFC gain notoriety and to keep it going by putting on these amazing fights against each other. You know, to have it cheapened like this and you know, just thrown to the wolves. It's just low class the way they did it. They could have done it a lot better. And whether it's going to be successful or not, I don't know. But the thing that does, I think, carry it over the top is when they did pass this ban in New York State, they said they were worried about the message that MMA was going to send. So if you're going to couch something under First Amendment, it's very slick to be able to look at your opponents in their words and be able to point out that they say that it's communication, it's speech, it's expression, because the sport is sending a message. Even your opponents are saying that. Whether it's a good or bad message, they're sending a message. So I didn't really see anywhere in the lawsuit where they hit that gotcha point, but I think that's the main thing that they have going for them. And they could win on those grounds, but I just think the state is not going to take it seriously for all these reasons. And the Pandora's box is worse. That's the kryptonite for this lawsuit, is the Pandora's box that it will open for all kinds of other athletes. NHL is talking about a lockup. The NBA is going to be locked out for a while. These guys are already talking about in the NBA filing an antitrust suit. If MMA gets classified as free speech, you're talking multiple hundreds, thousands of lawsuits. So it won't be good. But it's definitely worth analyzing, looking at, following. I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on this lawsuit. But if you haven't read it yet, you can find a copy of it on our blog. And if you haven't had enough of figuring out what it's all about, then look on the blog later tonight. And if you are an MMA Pass premium member, you can read my lawsuit cheat sheet. I've been working on it for the last 2 days, combing through this thing. It's over 100 pages long, so I'm going to make it less than 10 pages, the condensed version, and give everybody a real good look at it. But I worked hard on it, so it's going to be a premium feature. We just got our first check, I told you, Tony, $38 from MediaPass. So
that's awesome.
Out for us if we do a lot more creative stuff and we offer a lot more. And it's cheap. I think I don't know what I said it for the last. I think it's like $4.99. Something crazy like that. So it'll be worth it. I'm going to do a lot more creative stuff on that and work-oriented stuff that gives you a lot of information. But I don't know. I think I've given you enough of a rundown there on that. But if you're a big-time reader and you want to get the gist of what it's all about, it's actually, it would make a great movie. A lot of the story background of this lawsuit, it reads well. Yeah, it's not just some technical lawyer who put this together. I've read a lot of UFC lawsuits, and they don't sound as good as this one. So they're paying this lawyer big bucks to write some stuff like that. This guy is like the Shakespeare of lawyers. With some of this stuff. The whole history of MMA is there. The guy really did his homework. There's a lot of mention of the business of MMA and how it's grown. It's good stuff. But anyway, that's about an hour gone by in the show. If you want to weigh in on any of this, anybody out there listening, you can give us a call at 347-324-3228. Mention MediaPass. Another thing we're going to do with MediaPass is we're going to start having the Ring Girl contest. I know people pay for sex, so we do have some sexy ladies that are waiting in the wings for our next Ring Girl contest. And right now, I'm sort of occupied with leaving Las Vegas taking off for the East Coast, getting back settled in the New England area. So the Ring Girl contest is kind of taking a back seat while I get my shit together, so to speak. But we will have a Ring Girl contest put together before our next show, which is going to be the week after next, because next Thursday is Thanksgiving, right? We don't want to put on
Thanksgiving. Yes,
just don't do it. I might log on and just play a previous show or a previous interview from the podcast page, but we're not going to do a live show. It is a sacred holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Floyd Mayweather is not going to be eating the traditional Thanksgiving dinner. And I don't know if you can guess, but what do you think he's going to be eating?
Chicken?
Nope.
That's what all the Pacquiao fans would be saying.
He's eating chicken.
He's like a cannibal. He's eating one of himself. What would I say Floyd was eating? He's like, you can tell, like a very health-conscious kind of guy with his training regimen. I would say probably going to be something along the lines of like a tofu turkey.
I think he's going to be eating some turducken. Unless he's signs
of. I was going to say that, but I was like, that's a John Madden thing.
Well, he's a turkey, he's a duck, he's ducking, and he's a chicken. If he doesn't sign this fight with Manny Pacquiao, so I think the turducken fits him best. I don't really actually know if he's going to be eating turducken, but I have always wanted to try that for Thanksgiving. I've never been lucky enough to even see it in person, except on TV. But it just seemed worth playing that joke out because of the first clip we did. Stay ducking. That was my favorite part. Mayweather probably didn't even hear that part. Stay ducking. I don't know. What else can we talk about here? We're supposed to have Roy Jones Jr. on tonight. That kind of fell through the cracks there.
Really?
Trainer Tom Yankello there was adamant, yeah, let's go, we're going to do it tonight. And then all of a sudden we find out they're both traveling tonight.
That would have really...
But all is not lost. We will reschedule. We already have somebody lined up for the 9:15 slot, I believe, on December 1st. That's going to be the head injury expert there. We had to reschedule. So we're going to reach out to Tom. He was good enough to call me today. I didn't get back to him, but I'm going to call Tom Yankello. I'm going to see if we can get Roy Jones Jr. for December 1st. And speaking of legends, I have not yet even gone into the Mike Tyson meetup autograph thing. It's a story in itself. I didn't really write a story on the website about it other than a story about the glove I got him to sign, which we're going to raffle off next year at the Rocky Marciano statue dedication festivities. We're going to take the other glove. Now, it's important to note that the glove set itself is a Everlast Muhammad Ali Signature Series glove. Red pair of gloves with white Muhammad Ali signature embossed over them. And I'll tell you, the signature looks real enough that I had about 15 people ask me if it was really Muhammad Ali's signature on the glove. I got Mike Tyson to sign one of them. Now, it was $235 to get one glove signed. And I found out right before I left, actually, that there was a line out the door to get in there. I showed up a little bit early. I got the autograph and I left. And I did get lucky enough to be next to a guy who kind of shuffled me right to the front of the line. He had a glove that already had some signatures on it. He knew the deal. He'd been there before. He's a collector. He even tried to sell me tickets to the Marquez fight that night. But anyway, I was just so starstruck once I got to the point where I'm getting ready to meet him. I forgot to take my digital camera and give it to somebody and get a picture taken of the whole thing. I just came up there with the glove, and before I even got up there, first of all, I'm in line, and I see this dude go over to Tyson, rip his shirt off, and do this big production. Tyson's laughing his ass off. You know, they get the picture taken with them, like, squaring off with fists in each other's face, you know, as a joke. Both laughing, and, you know, cameras popping. Funny, funny, funny stuff. Anyway, I get up to the line. You know, the guy with the other glove goes first. And I get up there. And I know I don't have much time, so I tell Tyson right away, as I'm giving him the marker to sign with, they brought a special Sharpie for the purposes of him signing this. And I point to the Muhammad Ali signature, and I said, I brought these gloves for you to sign because when you were on the Arsenio Hall show, Ali said that you would have beat him. And Tyson's, picks up the marker, and he just smiles and laughs and actually turns away there for a second, and he's like, I can't beat anybody. He says. like I'm saying he would have beat him now, you know, which is obvious, you know. The guy's
right.
That old. Obviously, you can beat him now, but I'm saying when you were on the Arsenio Hall show, Tyson probably doesn't even remember. And he's like, he was literally like, moving his hands in a circular fashion, like, you know, hurry up, everybody, you know, because he knows this is how he makes a lot of his money. The guy afterwards told me this is how he makes all his money, which I don't believe, but he makes a lot of his money with these autograph signings. And if you think about it, you know, the average cost, considering a picture, a signed picture is $130. So you can go through the line for free, but you're not going to get anything for it. You're not going to get a signature, nothing. You're not even going to get a picture unless you have somebody else take it. So the average paying customer is probably paying somewhere between $180 and $500, $600 for whatever they want. So the more people he sees in that time frame, the more money he makes. You know? And he's sitting there popping grapes and, you know, telling everybody to hurry up and this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, it's very rushed, but you get an opportunity to say your piece. And, of course, I gave the usher there my business card. And right before I left the club, I just say to Tyson, you know, I'd really love to get you on my radio show sometime. I'm a huge fan. And he looks at me, and he gives me the big, crazy Mike Tyson smile, and he goes, I don't know, man. The funniest thing, you know. It was just like he was very honest about it. Like, he didn't really say it, but he said it's like, you're not going to happen. You got to have money for that guy. Pretty much,
yeah, right. That's the truth, you know?
But it just kind of made me laugh because that's Tyson being Tyson. He's very laid back, very friendly guy. You lose all nervousness when you meet him because you see him so much on TV, you feel like you know him these days, you know, and from back in the day when I used to watch him fight. He's not that guy anymore. He's not very violent. He's not crazy. So he's so approachable. He's so laughable, you know, just a great guy all around, personality wise now. Total change of attitude. And as much as he was kind of rushing things along and being like a little bit egotistical about his time, you can understand why. I mean, that's how his main, that's his main source of income. That's what pays
right.
for his big man in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not rude about it. You know, he's funny when he's kind of being rude by telling me there's no fucking way I'm going to get him on the radio.
Right, right.
Different words.
I mean, Mark definitely got a unique personality. He did, obviously, you know, he wasn't there live.
but he did send a video message that was played at Smoking Joe Frazier's funeral this past Monday in Philadelphia. And I'd like to just briefly touch on that. First of all, Rich, as I said to you in an email last week, I really want to again thank you for putting such a great show together last week. I mean, it just happened to be a coincidence that we had Patrick McGallagher booked for the show that was going to be a Smokin' Joe tribute show. I mean, it wouldn't have worked so great if it was, you know, somebody in the field of mixed martial arts that doesn't really watch boxing, and we're going to talk about more about their career.
We had to bring in geezers for that show.
What?
The older guys. We had to bring in the real geezers for that show, the older guys.
Yeah, anyway, well, I got, like, the geezer mentality here, so... but, no, it was a great show. John Greenberg was on the show. He did a great job. And it was just like an open forum. I had one of my colleagues listen that night. I gave her the shout-out last week, and she texted me. She's like, thanks for the shout-out. That's awesome. But I saw her the next day. I'm like, what did you think about the show? And she goes, I was really impressed. And I said, you know, I guess you didn't think, you know, I could pull it out, did you? And she was like, you really shocked me. Because, you know, you see me at work, and, you know, I'm just basically bitching and moaning all day about how much I hate my job. but, you know, obviously didn't see me in the light, but, you know, heard me in the light when I was talking about something that I have, you know, a lot of knowledge about, and also I'm very passionate about. You know, when I'm at work, it's like, you know, basically I'm here, you know, I don't give a shit. You know, somebody asks me, yeah, whatever you want. Boom, 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 here, we'll do it this way, done. But here is, like, you know, an opportunity to talk about, you know, something that means a lot to me. But Smokin' Joe was, you know, buried this past Monday. They did have, and I couldn't go because I had things that I was doing on Saturday that were already prearranged. And God forbid I try to take off work a little bit on Friday to go down to the Wells Fargo Center for the, you know, where his body was lying in state. But, you know, it was the coffin was closed. They had one of his cowboy hats on top of it, couple pictures, you know, a still picture standing with the title, and then a picture of the famous left hook against Muhammad Ali in 1971. And, you know, lied in state and, you know, for 2 days so people could come pay their final respects. The funeral was Monday in Cheltenham, Pennsylvania, which was only literally about 2 miles from where I grew up. The church was. I grew up in Cheltenham, Pennsylvania. The church is only a couple miles from where I grew up. And it was a 5.5-hour ceremony. Reverend Jesse Jackson did part of the eulogy. And Muhammad Ali was there. They said he looks very frail, very frail. I saw a couple still pictures. You know, obviously he doesn't look like he's in the best health right now. But at one point during the eulogy, you know, they came out and said, you know, let's give Smokin' Joe one more standing ovation. Everybody got up and cheered. And Ali even got up and, you know, gave his former rival a standing ovation. And Mike Tyson sent a video message. I think Floyd Mayweather may have sent a video message. Mickey Rourke, the actor, sent a video message. And he really elicited some good laughs at everybody, you know, talking about Smokin' Joe. And he goes, he got in the stands and he goes, this is the man that knocked the greatest of all time on his ass. And everybody laughed at that. It was obviously a nervous laugh because, you know, you're not used to laughing at a funeral. But, you know, they said it was a 5.5-hour ceremony, and it was really touching. And, well, it was a perfect way to send off, you know, Smokin' Joe. My dad said a couple weeks ago when we first found out that, you know, Smokin' Joe's time was limited and he was in pretty bad shape, because I never thought that Ali would outlive Frazier. Just because Ali was really in, you know, declining health the last few years. But, you know, when the big C gets you, you know, when it gets you in that advanced stage, it's a tough one to beat. As I still have the Philadelphia paper the other day, you know, talking about, you know, the funeral and everything. And the one thing, the resounding theme was, cancer did not knock out Joe Frazier. It just merely outpointed him.
Actually, speaking of Ali, right before the Manny Pacquiao fight, I mentioned it on the show last week, Pacquiao had an appearance with Freddie Roach on the Piers Morgan show on CNN. I don't know if you got to catch that, but I did. And they mentioned Parkinson's and Ali and how Roach has Parkinson's. And it sort of, they didn't talk about it, but it brought me back to your mention of how Ali acted when he got in the ring against Joe later on in their lives, how he perked up. Because Freddie claims, actually Bob Arum made the claim for him, and then Freddie confirmed it, that his Parkinson's actually goes away when he gets in there with Manny with the mitts. And to go back to Mike Tyson, too, he said Mike Tyson hit him the hardest by accident in training one time. Just about knocked him out on his feet. but he did say that Manny does catch him every now and then. But, you know, he's pretty good with the mitts. And as we mentioned last week, Freddie actually has a connection to another guy who recently died, the original Iron Mike Pusteri, who's going to get a plaque like Ali Colombo's. We're going to raffle off the copycat Mike Tyson, Iron Mike Tyson there. They're going to have his signature with the Ali glove auctioned off to benefit him. But another interesting part of this Piers Morgan interview is Piers actually got into the ring and sparred with Manny. Not seriously, obviously. You know, insurance to pay for that, but he went through the motions and he did the mitts with Freddie and actually missed and punched him in the chin. But Freddie was good about it. But it was a great interview. And, you know, sure enough, at one point in the interview, Pacquiao actually admitted that he has a George Foreman syndrome. And I say that because George used to say during some of his comeback fights with the bigger names that we got to see growing up, before he actually won the title against Moore, he'd have a loss to a tough guy, and he'd say, "I felt bad for the guy." You know, I started to think that he'd done so good and deserved so much more. I didn't want to hit him anymore. And this is coming from a guy who's a preacher, you know, born again Christian preacher dude. So, you know, he loves his fellow man, you know, whether he's fighting him or not. So he has that respect for the opponent. And Pacquiao admitted he does the same thing. He sometimes feels bad for the guy. So obviously with two controversial fights behind them, you know, a little bit of animosity because Marquez has gone out there and said that he beat him in those two fights and it's been really had him in a... still, there's that respect between the two of them, and I think that had a little bit of a factor on why Manny didn't just totally go off and beat him to a pulp, you know? So, that was a little bit telling to hear him say it, that he does actually feel bad for some of his opponents and lets up on them as a result. And when you have the skills that he has, you can get away with it and still win. But I don't know. I just don't think it's as much of a controversy as it was, you know, the night of the event. If you look back at it, especially if you watch the HBO feed, it's much closer. It's super close. And then one thing that I really enjoyed about that fight is that they fought, you know. Their backs barely ever touched the ropes. That whole entire fight. They worked towards the center. They fought their own strategy. They didn't go toe-to-toe and give you that, you know, slugfest type of fight. It was strategy, but it was still entertaining because they didn't play games, you know. They came to fight and they fought. Which, you know, still, even when that happens, you know, when it's a very close fight, you still have that, you got to take it from the champion factor. So that was another thing that made me think, wow, you know, you got to give it to Manny. It's close.
But I don't know. That's the extent of what I have tonight. I don't know if we have much in the works here in the radio show links. I got one link I'm supposed to mention. Dana White talks UFC versus boxing paydays. Now, this was written before the UFC on Fox event. Dana White was on Jim Rome is Burning and says that perceptions about the pay scale in MMA are skewed a little bit, especially when considering how long boxing has been around. That quote from Dana White. Here it is. Think about this. You talk about the sport of boxing. When we got involved in this thing, you know where it came from. We've been talking about it. 2001, this thing was dead. Talking about MMA. The Fertitta brothers, my partners, financed this thing. This thing didn't turn a profit until 2006. Every dime, $44 million these guys pumped into this thing, White stated. Since 2006, people, when they come at us talking about boxing money and Floyd Mayweather makes this, boxing's been around for 100 years. Yeah, Texas has been around longer than that. But anyway, we were talking about the big fights that were on, the big pay-per-view numbers they do. This thing started to turn profit in 2006. It was funded 100% by my partner since 2006. The number is something like we've made 40 millionaires, 20-something multimillionaires, and lots of guys make tons of money. The money is spread out through all the fighters. It's not two guys make millions of dollars and the rest of the guys make nothing. If you look at what we've been able to achieve in 10 years and the pay scale, the way the pay scale has gone there, it's pretty impressive. Dana White, you sound like Don King more with each.
Well, you know what? And see, here's another thing, Rich. Here's another load of complete, you know, bullshit that he's trying to spin on his own side. First of all, if it doesn't matter if you started in 2001 and the other sports started 100 or 200 years ago. That doesn't matter. You know, what matters right now is what you're making right now, okay? It doesn't say, well, you know, if it's something like this, say, you know, you and I both start a job, and I start the job in 2001, and I'm making so much, and then I start getting raises and stuff, and then you come on at the minimum amount in 2011, well, yeah, you know what, I am going to make more than you, only because I've been there for, you know, 10 freaking years, and I've worked my way up, and I've gained pay raises. You know, even though your minimum amount will be more than my minimum amount was 10 years ago because of inflation, doesn't matter. That's one thing. But to say, oh, yeah, just because one sport's been around longer, you know, that's why there's more money pumped out. That's bullshit. Bullshit topic number two on that is the fact that, it's like, you know, he's talking about, like, fight cards, and it looks like the two headliners make all the money, and then the undercard guys get nothing. Once again, load of shit. I remember years ago, Tyson, especially after he got out of prison, he was making like $20 million a fight. He's fighting Bruce Seldon. You know, it's going to be a crap, you know, fight because Seldon was scared to death. Tyson's making $20 million. Seldon's making a nice chunk of change. But then you had guys on the undercard, and I don't remember if Julio Cesar Chavez was on that undercard or not, but I know he fought on a lot of Tyson undercards. So you're getting guys like Chavez on some of these cards, Felix Trinidad on some of these cards, Terrible Terry Norris on some of these cards. You're talking about good fighters. These guys are not fighting for $20,000. These guys were making high in the six figures, if not seven figures, especially a guy like Chavez, who, I mean, basically fought on a lot of Tyson cards and made good money on all of them.
All right, and the thing with boxing is, it's very open. You find out, you know, very quickly exactly what guys get paid. And there's no bonus system, you know. It's all written out. You get paid what you get paid. You might get a win bonus in some respects, but, you know, there's no knockout or submission of the night bonus. You get paid what you get paid. You don't have different organizations competing against each other.
you know, the WBC, the IBF, they have their different titles, but they're not competing against each other. The promoters are competing against each other
right.
to make fights and to make money. So it's a whole different ball game. Yeah, I get that. But you're right. The history, the length it's been around, has nothing to do with it.
Right.
It has everything to do with how much money you have on hand right now, how successful you are. You know, Don King was a scumbag when he was making millions upon millions of dollars because everybody knew he was keeping most of it and giving the fighters shit and not taking care of their business like he should have been. And a lot of people credit him for destroying Mike Tyson's career, even though Tyson probably had a lot to do with it himself. But, you know, Dana White is really that type of guy. And he's been that outspoken, crazy, egotistical maniac, millionaire type of dude almost since day one. And don't get me wrong, I really respect Dana White's knowledge of the sport. He knows a lot about his own sport. He researches it. He watches a lot of it. He knows the fighters. He knows how to market stuff. But, you know, it's not his business sense and his finances that built this. It's, he says it himself. It was the Fertitta's money that built this company. It's not costing him a dime. It's never cost him a dime. He's earned everything because of this sport. You know, he hasn't put any real blood, sweat, and tears in it other than going to the Fertitta's and saying, you should buy this. That's should be his only claim to fame, but he gets so much more credit for shaping and inventing the sport. Like, you know, he made it. He built it from scratch, and he didn't. You know, and that's the thing that pisses me off the most, because he doesn't go and correct people and act humble and say, no, don't give me all this credit. I don't want it.
Yeah, right.
Which is what a real leader should do. I think there was Aristotle who said that, you know, the leader that you really want is the one who's going to run kicking and screaming from it. A real leader doesn't want to be a leader. You know, it's a humbleness is a huge quality of being a good leader. And Dana White just goes out there and he says whatever the hell he wants to. He throws expletives out there like they're going out of style. And he gets away with it because that creates press, creates drama. It creates both people that hate you and people that want to listen to every word that comes out of your mouth.
Absolutely.
And work on that you walk on. So for him to go out there and say those types of things about boxing, especially when he's supposed to know about boxing, that's where he got his start. He goes out and he says that shit. And he's paying the guys what he's paying and trying to justify it. And he's purposely being very surreptitious about the way that he says things about these fighters who are millionaires, supposedly. And he says it plain. They make a lot of money. They are millionaires. But he never explains it's more than just their base pay. You know, he never says the UFC paychecks is what got him over the millionaire hump. Never says that. And if you look at the top, even the top dogs, even Brock Lesnar, who's making in excess sometimes of $300,000-$400,000 a fight, and is probably the highest paid MMA fighter out there, even he's got to go out there and write a book. You know, granted he's been injured and so on, but you know, he's got to go write a book to make money. And every single one of these MMA fighters that goes into the cage relies on having to put a sponsor's name on their shorts or a bunch of sponsors on their banners. That's how they get through training. That's how they can survive and not have to have a day job. So Dana White is out to lunch and just full of shit, really, in general. And I really think people forget too easily, like you said, that he's never been in a fight himself. And I so wish that, you know, somebody along the line who challenged him, he would actually accept it. And we would see him in an actual fight with somebody. But I don't care if it's a pugil stick fight on American Gladiators. I want to see Dana White actually get in a fight before he opens his mouth again about somebody's performance or what he's paying these people and what they're worth, yada, yada, yada. And another thing about the lawsuit, too, they named Matt Hamill in the lawsuit, who happens to be a resident of Utica, New York. And he's not even fighting in the UFC anymore. He's retired now. He left the league. But I swear they just put him in that lawsuit because he's deaf. And he represents a story of diversity that they can add to the mix. And that this is one of those ways they're just using people, outright using people, and making it seem like it's cool. Just using his story, and they say that, you know, the reason why he's part of the lawsuit is because he wants to open an MMA bar in New York. And the ban is not stopping him from doing that. It's not, you know. They make a big stink about how the ban, the way it's written, actually prohibits anything that supports a live MMA event. But they're not enforcing that part of it. The only part of it they're enforcing is and there's no public MMA events live in the state lines. That's it. They're not saying all the gyms have to shut down, all the stores that sell MMA clothing and products have to shut down. It would be chaos if they did that. They're not. They're not doing it. So to have Matt Hamill used like that is another offensive thing in addition to the Gina Carano situation. But that's it. That's the Occupy Radio Street rant, last rant of the night. We have another half an hour optioned out for this show, but I got plenty to do to pack and get ready for the flight home tomorrow, so we're going to call it a night, unless you have anything else, Tony, that you wanted to mention.
I don't. My gym is back open. I'm happy. I've been beating on the other guy. I had a bad day at work today, so I came out and I took it out on the heavy bag. I said that's going to prevent me, hopefully, from going in and smacking the shit out of somebody tomorrow.
If I'm going to be back close to my heavy bag this weekend again. I haven't been hit in years. Literally. So, well, we're going to do some big things with the website. We're going to start taking advantage of what we have for content. We have a media pass situation we talked about. But we also have to wipe the fnu.mypodcast.com site clean by December 1st. And what I'm going to do with that content is host it on a site where you actually have to pay per clip just to listen to it or download it or whatever. So nothing's going to be free anymore. We're going to maximize every penny that we can make off this website so we can actually get a living wage out of it one of these days before we get too old and have to pass it on to somebody else. So chin up. The sun will come out tomorrow. It's actually going to be sunny for a week, at least a week, according to the Weather Channel, when I get back to the East Coast. So I'm going to miss out on all that great rain that you guys have been having.
Yeah. Well, I'm starting to work this weekend, getting the Christmas tree lot ready. So I'm going to work 8 hours on Saturday, maybe 4 hours on Sunday. Black Friday, probably put 15 hours in. You know, I'm getting my money. You know, I got good news and bad news. The Phillies pissed me off as usual. For the last 4 or 5 years, when I get my six-game package of tickets, I'd always get the fireworks package because it would be a Friday in July, usually right after the 4th of July, which they have. This past year they had it on the end of July, but whatever. This year the announcements come out, the fireworks came on, and it was on a fucking Monday and Tuesday. Like, now who picked the hell? And at the end of June, I'm like, what are you doing, you idiots? I'm like, that annoys me. So if I don't get the fireworks package this year, I might get the Boston Red Sox package and get me a game when they're playing Boston. Yeah.
By the way, who's your closer now?
I don't know. You know, the Red Sox are so up in the air. They don't even have a new manager yet. We're losing people.
Be honest. Obviously, it's not going to help them with their hitting problems, which was what befell them last year. But did the Phillies do the best move in picking up Papelbon?
I don't know. I was going to get it. Papelbon is actually not very well loved to the point that people are going to riot in the streets over him. And, you know, they're going through so much turmoil right now with obviously the management falling apart. It's going to be a rebuilding year next year. And, you know, it's just like it's the whole New England sports scene is in limbo right now. I mean, we had the Bruins win the Stanley Cup, but I got a feeling it's going to be a few years before we win any more major championships. There's no NBA, so that's not happening.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Our best chance of all three. The
Eagles are out of it. They're officially pissing me off. Flyers just won tonight, so we'll see. And we'll see what the Phillies do. I have a tailor right now. She is developing me literally a replica of the Apollo Creed outfit from Rocky IV with the Phillies logo on the back. How badass would that be?
That's nice.
All right. Well, Rich, I'm going to cut out, man. I will. I guess I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. To all the listeners out there, have a great, happy, and safe Thanksgiving. And, you know,
this will be the fourth year. I'm actually going to be looking forward to watching the Lions on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, right, that's the truth. I'm not looking forward to going over my aunt's house for Thanksgiving because everybody argues I'll be hungover. That's usual. All right. Well, to all the peeps out there, this is your boy, the Tornado. Clocking out. Rich, have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll reconvene in 2 weeks.
And don't forget to go to drinkcocaine.com. Don't snort it. Drink it. And check out zionshop.com and all our happy sponsors on the website. Like I said, you haven't heard enough about the UFC lawsuit from me tonight. You can check out the blog. We're going to have a nice big article there. Cheat sheet, the Cliff's Notes on this lawsuit. It's a pretty big deal, and it's pretty interesting stuff. Even though I have a lot of criticism, I have a lot of insight too, so check that out and pay for it. Pay us some money. We've worked hard for it. And December 1st, we'll be back.
All right, we'll be back more than ever.
Adios.
Later.